Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Hello, welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Hi, I'm Pat Wolf, and today I'm joined by Teresa.
Hi.
Nicola.
Hello.
Linda.
Hi.
Heather.
Hi.
And Steph.
Hello.
This week on Write Club, we're going to be talking about the short story form. We'll be sharing our thoughts on short stories and talking to Caris Bray, who has had some success with the form. Before that, Teresa will be reading one of her stories for us. Linda will be talking about some words related to books. And finally, Nicola and Liz Harris will be telling us what is on their bedside tables. But first of all, Steph is going to ask us to
name the novel.
Right, are you ready?
Another chance to fail.
Okay. Be positive, another chance to beat Teresa.
Oh. Yeah, well, I haven't been doing very well the last few shows, have I?
Okay, this novel opens in Jamaica. It tells the story of a young girl whose widowed French mother marries a wealthy planter.
I've got a glimmer, but...
Have you?
Okay. Yeah. Mm. Teresa's scribbling away, looking very smug, if I may say. You'll all get it on clue three, don't you? Yeah. After the death of her brother in an arson attack, the girl's mother goes mad with grief, and the girl is sent to live with an aunt and attend a convent, while her stepfather arranges a marriage to his son.
No.
It rings no bells.
Okay,
whatsoever.
This one, you'll get it on this one. Right. This novel is effectively a prequel to a Charlotte Bronte novel.
Yeah, I was right the first time.
And could have been subtitled Reader, I Married Him First.
Yeah, I was right the first time.
I got the Jane Eyre connection, but then I didn't know was a prequel.
I haven't known. It's Nicola, are you with me? You had no idea either.
The Wide Sargasso Sea by, is it Jean Rhys?
It is by Jean Rhys,
right. I've heard of that. Yeah. I didn't realise that that's what it was about.
Yeah, it's the story of the woman in the attic.
Yeah.
You know, the mad wife
in
the attic.
Well, I got all that. I knew it wasn't Jane Eyre.
It's her story. And it's a young Jamaican girl, Bertha, who's married off to Rochester and taken back to... And the Wide Sargasso Sea ends with her taking her candle and escaping from Grace Pool to wander around the house with her candle.
Uh-huh.
It's fabulous.
Wow. Yeah.
And of course, Reader, I Married Him First is because Jane Eyre ends with Reader, I Married Him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you knew that.
Yeah.
Not teaching you to suck eggs there. Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys.
Excellent.
Not a long novel and great fun.
Great fun. A woman goes mad.
I liked it because it was fun to see how it's a bit like Longbourn, the servant story of Pride and Prejudice.
Right.
R-H-Y-S.
So it's I found it fun because it's nice to look at how the authors dovetailed in story that we all know very well, the classic story. So
Thank you.
Seems to be all the rage at the moment. One of us should do that, something like that.
Forget thinking of something original.
That's been around a while.
Yeah, it's just old.
Perhaps the first of this kind.
Probably the first of them, yeah. Check when it was... I've only read it in the last couple of years. Been around a long time.
30, 40 years ago.
Yes, it is at least. 40s or 50s,
Well, as I said at the start of the show, we're going to be discussing the short story. If you're planning to enter our competition, and I hope you are, who knows, you just might find this of some help. To kick us off, Teresa's going to read one of her stories for us. Was this a competition entry, Teresa?
No, it wasn't. It was a writing exercise that became a story. It was one of those where you roll a dice, and according to the number, I rolled the dice four times, and I think if I remember correctly... The setting was a Spanish bar. Mm. There was a character who was a gardener, an object which was a bicycle, and the situation was a misunderstanding, I think. Ah. And I wrote this from it. So it's something that I've had knocking around for a while, but I thought I'd share it with you. He saw her bicycle leaning against the backyard wall. He checked the time. It wasn't late anyway. He tied on his apron, hoping to slip into the bar without being seen. Still work here then? Juan was grinning at him. Why wouldn't I? Juan went back to butterflying sardines, whistling tunelessly as he worked. No sign of Gloria in the kitchen. Dave took a deep breath as he pushed the door into the bar. The usual early afternoon crowd. Malcolm and Sarah looked up from their all-day breakfast. Turned out nice again, Malcolm's regular joke. If it's not funny the first time, Dave thought. A local Spanish couple enjoying a white Rioja with their fish, some teenagers playing table football, a few customers outside on the pavement, where Gloria was taking an order. A couple in neatly ironed clothes with pale skin, first day of their holiday. As she lifted her head towards the doorway, Dave dropped his eyes and made a show of wiping down the bar. If he just acted normal, then maybe nothing would change. Wiping towards the till, he noticed the flyers were missing. His adverts for Dave's gardening service were always there. He moved behind the bar to look for them. A cappuccino and a glass of red, table three. Gloria walked through to the kitchen. No smile, Dave noticed, but she hadn't fired him. He delivered the drinks, subconsciously tracking Gloria as the couple quizzed him about life in Spain. When he got away from them, he went to the kitchen. Juan, have you seen my flyers? Juan just grinned and pointed to the Spanish sign, "Don't forget to recycle." Dave muttered Judas and opened the box for paper recycling. There were his flyers, crumpled on top of yesterday's newspapers. He'd blown it. All this time, working for Gloria and keeping his feelings in, gone in a moment of drunken idiocy. He couldn't even stay away on his night off. That idiot Juan kept topping up his glass and saying, "Tell her, man, just tell her." Dave had taken Gloria's hand and looked, or tried to, into her eyes as he opened his heart. All she said was, "Take him home, Juan." And that traitor had giggled all the way. "Gloria dumped my flyers? No, man, it was me, just a joke." Pepe walked in. They never worked the same shift. If Gloria wanted Pepe, that meant she was sacking Dave. He took off his apron and headed for the door. "And where do you think you're going, hombre?" That cool, dark voice. His legs melted. He turned. "Listen, Gloria, I'm really sorry about last night, but I just want you to know, drunk as I was, I meant every word. Pepe, you're in charge. David, I'm taking you out to lunch. Juan, close your mouth before you swallow a fly." She pulled him through the door before he could make sense of anything. He heard Juan's giggle. "I told you, man."
I love that.
That's cute.
I love that.
Like that, yeah.
There was one part that caught me that I didn't, I thought was out of place somehow. The part where you say, few customers outside on the pavement, where Gloria was taking an order. I didn't, somehow it just didn't seem to fit there.
Yeah, I think reading it, I felt that it wasn't right. Yeah.
It was because there's a full stop after a few customers outside on the pavement.
Yeah.
So the sentence is where Gloria was taking an order.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. So right. Absolutely right.
I thought it was a typo and it should have been there Gloria was. But
right. Okay. What I loved about this was you crammed so much showing in, and there was, you know, you didn't tell us where we were to start with, and it was only really after a few paragraphs I realised we were actually in Spain, and as soon as I realised that, I was thinking, this is the kind of bar I never want to go to. but then you had so many lovely little touches, like one person's ordering a coffee and the other's having a red wine, and then there's that couple with their freshly ironed clothes and white skin. Just you drew the evocative picture of this bar so well in such a few words.
It was lovely. Yeah, the economy of it was really good.
Did you deliberately come up with, he saw her bicycle, he checked the time, he wasn't late, he tied on his apron? Was that deliberate as a kind of, did you deliberately put those repetitions in the first paragraph?
I don't know if I consciously did it, but I probably just liked the rhythm of it as I wrote it.
Yeah, you know. Okay. And you've got made a show of wiping down the bar and then wiping towards the till. Again, you've got, you're using wiping twice, which may be deliberate or it may just be. But...
Yeah, perhaps I could have put working towards the till. Well, yeah, because
whatever,
that's...
Whatever, but no, apart from those things, which was me really working hard to find something to say, not me, not the sound of my own voice. I thought it was a really, really cute little piece.
And I think as a result of throwing the dice, I think it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it just shows you where a writing exercise can take you.
I just thought it was really well constructed and there was no detail was superfluous.
Thank you.
And I think that's the important thing, isn't it, with the short story?
Yeah.
That you make every word earn its place on the page.
Yeah, as with poetry that we talked about last week.
And a great, you know, I didn't see the end coming at all. I was just busy puzzling out why one would have thrown away the flyers.
It's not funny, one, is he? He thinks he is, but he's not.
But, you know, I like that we didn't really know what the problem was for so long. You build all of this... This curiosity about what's happening with
the
Dave.
The anxiety.
Is the conflict here? What did he do? Mm-hmm. And why would he get fired? And then we get it. And it's wonderful when you do reveal.
Yeah.
So I just...
I think we've all done something when we're drunk and had to face people the next day. Maybe not specifically revealing your heart.
I'll say nothing, Nicola.
That's probably just as well.
So I think we can relate to that. And when I sort of looked at it, it's about 500 words. So actually, if I wanted to enter it to a flash fiction competition, I could work it out a bit.
I love the... I'm intrigued by the fact that all of you... established writers, experienced writers, whatever you want to call them, veteran writers.
Oh, please. That sounds terrible.
I love the fact that you've got all these bits of writing tucked away that you haven't used for anything, but you've just produced and you can just, you know, bring them out and polish them up a bit and then send them off into the world.
Yeah, I'm getting away with it, but I'm going to run out soon now. I'll have to actually write something.
Well, you know, I recently threw many of my bits away. I did.
No.
I was moving and I was... Oh, look at this. But I thought, I went through, and I do regret some of them, but I went through and I thought, I'm never going to write on that again. And that's really no good. And that's not my style. What am I trying to do? And then delete.
But I've got a confession now. The only thing I've ever deleted from my computer was my very sad abortive attempt at erotic fiction.
It'll still be on your hard drive.
No, I don't. It's gone.
And
you've got
a husband who's
but he doesn't know anything about it. And he wouldn't want it
We want it. And he might be, the word, bribable.
We're going to have corruptible. To go down to the bottom of the ravine where she pitched the hard drive.
But no, I don't delete stuff because it doesn't occupy any space, you know, a text document. It's not, you know.
You should have followed my grand's advice.
Yeah.
Never throw anything away. Its time will come.
Then you end up being a hoarder.
It's terrible living with all the stuff in our house, so I don't agree with your grand.
I don't anymore after trying to move house. Okay, thank you everyone for that. That was a good example, I think, of a short story. But before that, Linda, I'm almost scared to ask. What have you got on your mind this week?
About books, words about books, you mean?
That sounds fairly harmless.
Well, I think we may have talked about some things like this before, but I just think that they're incredibly fun to look at some of the words that are around about books and book people that we rarely talk about. The first one here I have is sundoku, and it's not sudoku, but sundoku. Oh, Teresa's looking like she reckons. What is it, Teresa?
Is it all the books that you're planning to read that you've bought and haven't read yet? Is it something like that?
It's something like that. You're sundoku. How on earth do you know that?
I must have seen it on Facebook or something.
So it's a Japanese word that has no direct synonym in English. It means the act of leaving a book unread after buying it, typically piling it up together with other such unread books.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah.
I have a whole bookcase.
My problem is getting worse, I must say, after meeting you lot.
And another one here that I like, Libricide.
Death by a book. Yeah. Or killing a book.
Killing somebody with a book.
Yes.
Although rarely used today, libricide, the killing of a book, is the last thing any book lover wants to hear about. In the same vein, biblioclasm can make any book lover's heart stop because it is the intentional destruction of books, or specifically of the Bible. But I read something a few days ago about how a book was killed. I don't remember what context it was, but someone, a book was purchased for a good sum of money by a publisher who then would not publish it. Killed the book for, I think, as a favor to someone, or you know, someone who didn't want the book published. But that would be, wouldn't it be heartbreaking?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So maybe something like a kiss and tell type of thing.
Maybe
and somebody wanted
like
it
that.
Suppressed.
Yeah. And a friend of the publisher's said, would you do this for my friend who's in trouble? And
gosh. Interesting.
See if you know this one. Bibliotaph. T-A-P-H.
Taph.
Bibliotaph.
A tomb? Something to do with a tomb?
Something to do with that sort of thing. Bibliotaphs are people who bury their books by keeping them under lock and key. Bibliotaphs are often readers who hoard their books and protect them from others. Such habits may come from bibliolatry. Extravagant admiration of a book, making readers want to protect their story.
Well, you've got a first edition.
I was going to say, it would only be if it was something which had an intrinsic, you know, a value more than its literary value, a different kind of value. Yeah.
In all seriousness, books have to be protected from bibliothefts.
Steal books.
Even those who steal books
unintentionally by forgetting to return them. Because we just can't have that.
I must confess, I very often write my name in front of my
letter
in case I want it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if I do want it back, I'll say I'd like it back. Yeah. If I don't want it back, I tend not to have my name in it.
Yeah, see, there's a stationery item we all need, the little book.
It's really nice. You can you can get a stamp made with your name and a design in it. Because,
oh, really?
I did one for my sister, maybe for her 40th birthday, and then this Christmas my mum had them made for some of her great-grandchildren.
Oh, how nice.
And so it's a, you know, a choice of designs, whatever, and it'll say this book belongs to Primrose.
This book is from the library, Stephanie Rowe.
Yes, Ex Libris.
Ex Libris.
But you can have whatever
you
want.
I have Ex Libris book plates. Yeah. I only put them in my very, very special books.
What does Ex Libris mean?
From the library.
Fancy word for that, Okay. And a scripturient. Scripturient?
Scripturient. Is that somebody's prurient about handwriting?
I have to spell it for you. Scripturient. S-C-R-I-P-T-U-R-I-E-N-T.
I don't know because it's not Greek, it's Latin.
Oh, poor baby.
Oh, it's writing. Something about writing.
It's writing, yes.
Yeah.
A scripturient is simply someone who has a passion for writing.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
In other words, this is a book lover's favorite kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And even more interestingly, scripturients tend to get their work done in scriptoriums.
Yes,
I've heard of a scriptorium.
Well, that's from the medieval monasteries. Yes. They copied them out in the scriptorium.
Also known as a room set apart for writing, often found in monasteries where manuscripts were copied.
Yeah.
Way cooler than a personal office. Yeah.
So we're all scripturients. Scripturient club.
Right.
Well, I thought we could have Sundoku club, but there you go.
Yeah.
You have to have all of those things.
There's one more here that you might find interesting. Hamartia. H-A-M-A-R-T-I-A. Hamartia.
I've heard of that.
I have heard of that. Yeah. But I can't remember what it means.
Says, Perhaps one of the most gut-wrenching moments in a reading experience is a beloved character's downfall.
Oh.
Hamartia refers specifically to a fatal flaw that leads to the downfall of a tragic hero or heroine.
I know it from Greek tragedy, of course, that's what it is.
Yeah. It's dominantly used in Aristotle's Poetics to describe the destruction of heroes due to ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some instances of hamartia are so serious that readers may engage in finifugal, finifugal.
Okay, finifugal. I don't know what that means, but
something flat.
Which is shunning the end of anything.
Yes, avoiding the end.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Conveniently forgetting the ending of a book that dissatisfied you.
Mm-hmm.
It's your main coping mechanism when disappointed.
Okay. Really good. That was fun. That
was good.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
I'd like some additions to my sundoku, please,
for my birthday.
I don't know. I want to pause on my sundoku, I think.
Well, that's what a Kindle is, basically. They should call that sundoku.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You should just download the damn things.
Yeah, that's right. Sit there. Yeah.
Okay, we're joined by Caris Bray, who's the author of the short story collection Sweet Home and the brilliant novels A Song for Issy Bradley, which was shortlisted for the Reading Group Book of the Year 2015 and won the Utah Book Award for Fiction, and The Museum of You, which was shortlisted for the Book Diva Book of the Year 2016. Thank you for joining us, Caris. It's lovely to have you. A lot of writers, it seems, start off by writing short stories, and then, if you like, they progress to writing novels. Perhaps they feel that they've learned their craft, and that might seem to be the path that you've taken. So now you're a novelist. Have you left the short story behind?
No, definitely not. And I think that... don't really see it as a progression. I think some of my favourite short story writers are writers who have only written short stories. And when I mean only, I mean exclusively, rather than as only, as in, you know, they're not as good.
Yes,
So Alice Munro and Helen Simpson, you know, they're just brilliant short story writers. And why would they want to write anything else? I think for me, I started with a short story because... I was doing a master's degree, and I was being mentored by a brilliant short story writer who was really interested in the short story and got me into the short story. And also at the time, I had very small children, and it was just the ideal form for me because it was easy to think of something self-contained, you know, that within 3,000 words or 1,000 words sometimes, rather than to have to hold the whole sweep of a novel in my head. And I think, you know, once I'd sort of written a few short stories, then I thought, okay, I'll have a go at something bigger. So yeah, I definitely will, you know, carry on writing short stories. I've just written one that's going to be published in a collection about northern seaside towns. So yeah, I still do write them.
So your stories in Sweet Home have some fairy tale elements, and they're often quite surreal, whereas in your novels you seem to write in a more kind of realist, real life style. Do you think it's because the short story form is liberating and it lends itself to experimentation, or?
Yeah, I think you can maintain a conceit in a short story that would perhaps be annoying if you tried to do it, you know, in a novel. And I think that the short story does lend itself to experimentation, to humour, to like exploring those daft ideas that you might have, like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if you could buy your children at the supermarket? Or, you know, I'm sure a brilliant, you know, science fiction writer could write an excellent novel about that, but I can't. So for me, that was just one of those ideas that fit in a short story. And a lot of my favourite short stories are slightly odd. There's one by Adam Marek called The 40 Litre Monkey, which is a very strange story, but it's just absolutely lovely.
40 Litre Monkey. Wow. Yeah. I shall read it. Yeah. I shall go and write it down and read it.
You really should.
We've just announced a few weeks ago, we announced that we're holding a short story competition for our listeners. So what, do you have any advice for them?
I think in a short story, you have to make every word count. When people are reading short stories, they're less forgiving than they are when they're reading novels. I think people, when you're reading a novel, you don't mind a bit of a digression or some like beautiful description that maybe isn't entirely necessary, but you're sort of in that world and enjoying it. Whereas I think in a short story, you just have to be plunged straight into it. So you want to be grabbed straight away.
And every word has to earn its place on the page.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's very good advice. When you sit down to write a short story, do you plot it? Do you say, right, here's my three acts, or here's my beginning, middle and end? Or do you tend to sort of take a prompt and see where the words take you?
So I normally know when I'm writing, I normally know the beginning and the end. And then the middle is you know, how I'm going to get to the end is the bit that I'm fighting out on the paper. But yeah, I have to know sort of what's going to happen before I start, or at least as I'm going, I, you know, have to work out how I'm getting to that end point. So I suppose the story is like a bridge really between those two points that I already know. Yeah.
Really useful. Thank you very much. And, you know, you're working with a limited word count. Do you kind of give yourself so many words to reach the twist or the confrontation or the inciting incident and so on, or do you just kind of write it and then edit it down and down and down until it fits?
Oh yeah, I'll write it first and then I tend to edit as I go. Actually, I'm a terrible editor as I go, so normally when I have a first draft, that's almost it, because I do at the moment, this book I'm writing, I've been working on it for like nearly 2 years, and the first part, I can't see that the first part is going to change. It, you know, if the book gets bought, the first part is as it will be. And it's a terrible habit. And I am quite envious of writers who are just like, I write 1,000 words every day and I never look back until I'm editing. And I think, I really need to learn how to
do that. No, I'm like you. I play with it and play with it.
It might be a lot faster.
And then you worry that it's afraid and you're not actually getting to the end because you've rewritten the first three chapters about 70 times by the time you get to end.
Yeah, first three chapters are perfect.
No, that's really interesting. Well, thank you for that. So what are you currently working on, Caris?
So I'm working on a novel and it's about rain and climate change, and I suppose it's about people preparing for the worst and inadvertently making bad things happen by being pessimistic.
That's an interesting premise. That's very interesting. Yeah, because, you know, expect good things and good things will happen. Expect bad things, and self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? Thanks, Caris. It's been lovely talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Okay, bye. Oh, she was so interesting and so kind of inspirational. Just makes me feel like I want to go and try and write one now.
She's very, very generous with her time. And also, she, if you look on her website, she does actually say there, if you're reading The Museum of You or A Song for Izzy Bradley with your book club and you'd like to do a Skype interview with her, she offers to do that.
Oh, how fantastic.
She's
just
a really very wonderful person.
Yeah. She'll come to your book club meeting.
Via Skype.
I meant virtually.
Yes.
So we will put the link to Caris's website on our Facebook group. So if anybody is reading that, they can invite her along.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I thought I'll do a little bit of background research on this, unusually. You want me to tell you what Wikipedia has to say about short story?
Yes.
Just in case there is any confusion. A short story is a piece of prose fiction that can be read in one sitting. Emerging from earlier oral storytelling traditions in the 17th century, the short story has grown to encompass a body of work so diverse as to defy easy characterisation. At its most prototypical, the short story features a small cast of named characters – and focuses on a self-contained incident with the intent of evoking a single effect or mood. In doing so, short stories make use of plot, resonance, and other dynamic components to a far greater degree than is typical of an anecdote. But we're not going to discuss anecdotes. Mm-hmm. Yet, to a far lesser degree than a novel. While the short story is largely distinct from the novel, authors of both generally draw from a common pool of literary techniques. Short stories have no set length in terms of word count. There is no official demarcation between an anecdote, a short story, and a novel. Mm-hmm. Because that was going to be one of my first questions, actually, is there a limit? Is there a sort of...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting in relation to your Mark story, isn't it?
Which you is know, going on and on a bit.
It's going on and on a bit. It's interesting. But it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a novel. It's going to be a long short story, I think.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
So.
Yeah.
But it's interesting here that Wikipedia is saying it's a literary work that can be read in one sitting.
Yeah.
So it can't take more than...
A day?
3 hours to read?
Well, yes, that then defines sitting.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to go to the loo or get a cup of tea in the meantime.
One of the things, you know, one of the reasons that short stories have had a resurgence in popularity recently, it's partly to do with e-readers because you don't have to carry, you know, you've just got the one item or your phone. My daughter reads on her phone. But it's also defined as something you can read on your commute. Now, it depends what your commute is. If it's a 10-minute tube journey or an hour train journey.
Right.
Obviously, if you're driving, please don't read. but, you know, so people want something that they can complete in that time, right, which perhaps otherwise is dead time, right, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So that's another one of the reasons, perhaps, that the short story is quite
certainly
popular
with a long
days.
Short story. Some of the women's magazines will feature, the weeklies will feature a story that's spread over 2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're long short stories that are serialised.
Yes.
Is there anyone who actually prefers or who does read a lot of short stories?
I read short stories, yes, mm-hmm. I do. I like reading short stories a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
A book that I've recently taken up, as I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, Lucia Berlin's book of short stories I'm reading right now. But I like to read volumes of them. Mm-hmm. I like to read the Paris Review collection of short stories, etc. So... yeah, I enjoy them a lot.
Do you prefer mixed short stories by different authors, or do you prefer to read a lot of short stories by the same author?
I really like to read short stories by the same author.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, if there's a collection, an anthology, I kind of pick and choose among the ones that I read, depending on the title or the author, if I know them.
I think I tend not to choose to read them, but then... I can think of lots of short stories I've read that I've really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, I don't think like you, I don't think I can sit down with a volume of short stories. Somehow that doesn't satisfy me, even though there might be some good ones in there.
Right.
That's exactly the word I would use as well. I mean, I have actually, you mentioned a volume of short stories by Ray Bradbury.
Yes.
And I have actually downloaded that because I thought I'll push myself to see if I can, because... again, I just feel ultimately unsatisfied by a short story, although the ones we write together enough, you know, I really enjoy that. I really enjoyed yours today, but I wouldn't voluntarily pick up a short story and read it.
I think that maybe is the mark of a good short story, is when you don't feel dissatisfied with it.
Yeah, right.
Well, I wouldn't say I have a preference, but I do read short stories. I also do like a big chunky novel that you really lose yourself.
As do I.
Yeah, but
I've
read quite a few short stories and collections, and I went through a phase going back, starting in about 88, 89, when I discovered the short stories of Isaac Dinesen. Now, her writing is not really known so much in the UK, but she's very well known in the US and is taught on courses and things, but not in British universities.
No.
So I was in the library of a university, should have been working on my dissertation on Gunter Grass, but I found this little book called Winter's Tales, and I pulled it out, and it said something like, on the back it said, written during the dark days of Nazi occupation. These stories were smuggled out of Denmark to the US for publication. I thought that's interesting. And I read those and I just went on to read everything she wrote. I became quite obsessed, you know, the seven Gothic tales, the Angelic Avengers, all of these.
She's the person who wrote Out of Africa.
Also, her married name, Karen Blixen. Right. For her short stories, she chose a male name. She used her father's surname and the name Isaac, He Who Laughs. But I loved her work, and I must go back to it. It's a while since I've read it, but she explores certain themes. So she's quite interested in the conflict in human nature between passion and intellect, for example. And I remember one story is about twin babies, and they decide that these boys are destined, one for the church and the other to be an artist. And there's a fire. Oh, they tie a ribbon round one baby's neck to distinguish the one from the other. And there's a fire and only one child survives, but there's no ribbon. So he's brought up to be the religious one, the priesthood. But of course, the ribbon burnt in the fire and he should have been the artist. So she's very interested in those. And having read almost everything she'd written, I came to Babette's Feast, which now has been subsequently filmed and is quite well known, but I didn't know it. Nobody I knew read Isaac Newton. I just read all these things.
I didn't know she wrote Babette's Feast.
But that story to me was so perfect. It's so perfect. And I won't go into all the details of it, but it explores this difference between the sort of Lutheran Danish culture and the Catholic Southern French culture. But when I came to the end, I gasped in surprise. I laughed out loud, and it was just a totally satisfying ending appropriate to that story. And you'll never recreate that moment, because I was shocked and it was funny. But then within a moment I thought, but it's perfect, it's just right, it's absolutely the right ending. So that was my perfect story.
Short story.
But we're talking to Caris Bray, and I would recommend her collection Sweet Home, which are quite surreal and interesting short stories.
Surreal, that sounds good.
Anybody else got any favourites?
I don't tend to read short stories unless they hit me over the head. I've read a couple of Raymond Chandler's as a sort of study, you know, when you're directing to read them, because this is a good example of XYZ and so on. XYZ. And yes, I can appreciate them, but I don't choose to read short stories because they're over too quickly. And I like to read and just get completely absorbed, and so time goes away. I like to be in the fictive dream, and a short story simply doesn't last long.
Perhaps that's what it is for all of us that don't enjoy them so much, or wouldn't choose them voluntarily. Perhaps it's that, you know, escape into the fictive dream.
I just want it to last a lot longer.
Do you know what? I think it's
like that.
Yeah. I think it's like the difference between a snack and a main meal. And you don't necessarily always want to be eating full meals. Sometimes you like nibbles.
If I'm snacking,
snacks,
I'll snack on a radio programme or a podcast. Or, you know, The Archers. That's my snack.
Instead
of a short story.
Another good story that comes to mind, which you might like to find, look up, is Sarah Hall wrote something called Mrs. Fox, which won the BBC short story competition. A couple of days. That's a good story.
I was directed to read that.
Yeah.
I think I read Wolf Hall.
Wolf Border is the novel that she wrote.
Wolf Hall hardly counts as a short story.
I read Wolf Border, and having read Wolf Border, I went and read the Mrs. Fox story, and it's wonderful. But as I say, that wouldn't have been a choice. It was something that came out of something else.
When I first joined you lot and decided I wanted to write a sci-fi novel, I went and signed up for a sci-fi magazine. I read all of the short stories in that episode, it occurs to me it's a great way to discover new authors, because there was an absolute... most of them I can't remember at all, but there's one in there about... I won't tell you what it's about. Basically, it was a brilliant, brilliant premise, and I was so intrigued by the whole story that I would definitely go and read that author's novel. So perhaps
it's another way of introducing an author, because not everybody... As we discussed with Caris, and not everybody progresses, and it's not necessarily a progression from short story to writer to novelist. Some specialise, some do both and dip backwards and forwards.
I'd like to be able to write short stories.
Because we all do write short stories.
Well, yeah, but I don't feel
you don't develop them, do you? When you do a free write, you just do it.
Just do them and put them away. And,
I think they are probably, as a writing exercise, I think they're a good exercise in plotting and structure.
Yeah, a way to learn some writing skills as well, aren't they?
That's for sure, because, you know, it's more difficult to write short than long, as we all know. So,
because every word has to earn its place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's new forms of short stories in very recent years, aren't there? Flash fiction, for example. Mm-hmm. And where did that come from?
Now, those I don't find satisfying.
No, really. I avoid them.
Is it the 500 words thing?
They vary, but 500 words is a common...
Yeah. Sometimes it's 100.
Yeah.
So what makes a flash fiction story a flash fiction story rather than just a short story?
Length.
Just
the length.
Length.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. It still has to have a beginning, an inciting incident, and a...
But where did this form start? Who? How did it come about? And what was the need
Lindy
for it?
Have to look it up. Well, I don't know that there was a need. Perhaps as somebody thought it would be a fun or interesting thing to do.
It's probably a marketing exercise, like everything is.
Oh, that's so cynical. That's so cynical.
From a woman who writes business books.
Specifically also, marketing books.
She speaks as one who knows.
Yeah. And many of the great Victorian writers, great Victorian novelists wrote short stories. So Dickens, Elizabeth Gaskell, my beloved Wilkie Collins wrote many short stories. So also if you're, you know, I know some people are a little bit put off by Victorian novels, but you can start with a short story and get a feel for it.
Yeah.
The Reader's Digest has just popped into my mind.
Condensed books.
Yes. Well, they used to have a lot of short stories in it, as did women's magazines, didn't they? And Jackie and
Women's magazines still do.
Yeah. My only real experience of reading sci-fi was short stories, Asimov and Bradbury and so on. And I think they're good.
Yeah.
But I can't cope with full length sci-fi. Yeah. Well, it's nearly time to wrap up for this week, but before we do, there's just time for Nicola and Liz Harris to tell us what they're reading at the moment. So, Nicola, what's on your bedside table?
I've got Grass by Sherry Tepper. She's one of my favourite authors anyway. She writes post-apocalyptic feminist sci-fi, which rolls three themes that I love into one. And her books are great. She talks, there was one called Plague of Angels, which introduced me to the idea of archetypes. And that was a fantastic book set in the future where people, when they reach puberty, they had to choose an archetype that they felt most summed them up and then live in the style of that archetype. So in this book, Grass, I started reading it, and I'm not joking, within about 10 pages, the atmosphere of this book absolutely gripped me to the point I was holding my breath a lot of the time.
Right.
Chief protagonist Marjorie West Riding Ayarie juggles family issues and her conflicting religious beliefs as her family is sent to the little understood world of Grass to seek a cure for the mysterious alien plague affecting all of humanity. It's an interesting book because they take the concept of fox hunting and all of the aristocrats on this planet who are real anachronisms and rapidly becoming irrelevant in the grander humanity. But they've all started to do this kind of fox hunting, and there's some link to the fox hunting that they're doing with the local flora and fauna and the plague that's decimating humanity. And Marjorie's mission, if you like, is to try and find out what it is. Along the way, she falls in love, but there are so many thrilling, chilling... The writing is so good, it's got an air of menace about it throughout the book, and you're not absolutely sure where you're getting that feeling of menace from, but the writing is just so good. It was shortlisted for both the Hugo and the Locus Science Fiction Book Awards in 1990, and I thoroughly recommend it.
That sounds good.
Thanks, Nicola. And now Liz Harris is going to share what's on her bedside table.
Hi, I'm Liz Harris, and on my bedside table, I have a book called The Vanishing of Audrey Wilde. It's actually quite unusual that I'd read such a book because it takes place in two different time zones, only 50 years apart. But normally, I prefer books that stick to one time zone or that are linear, that progress chronologically, but not that they jump backwards and forwards. But I'm so glad that I overcame my initial reserve and I read this book by Eve Chase, because it is truly wonderful. I thought it a beautifully written novel, and it gripped me from beginning to end, and it made me read much too late in the night. If I'm still reading at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you know it's a very good book, or at least to my mind, it's a very good book. This tells a story of two families who, for the most of the story, live 50 years apart. But the stories are linked by a house called Applecott Manor, which is in the Cotswolds, which isn't actually that far from where I live. The reader follows the events that took place in the summer of 1959, when four girls, Margot, Flora, Pam and Dot, and the story of the 1959 plot is told through the eyes of Margot, who are somewhat deserted by their bohemian mother, as staying in Applecott Manor with their Aunt Sybil and Uncle Perry. And it's a very sad house because of something that happened years before, and I'm not going to tell you what it is because I do hope you read the book. But the sadness in the house seeps a little bit into the lives of the four girls and has a profound effect on their future. Then the second story is 50 years later, when Will and Jessie, his second wife is Jessie, and he has a daughter, Bella, from the first wife. But Will and Jessie and Bella and 3-year-old Romy move into Applecott Manor, which by then is very run down, and they feel the weight of its past on them. And the second point of view in the story in the present time is told by Will's wife, Jessie. So you have Margot telling what happened in 1959 and Jessie 50 years later. And sometimes I know, because of listening to people talking about such books, one strand of the story is more interesting than the other strand of the story. But in this case, I found both stories really quite gripping. And I was never sorry to return from one to the other, but I wanted to know all the time what was going to happen. I think part of that is because of the eye for detail that Eve Chase has. I like to be able to see the scene where the story is set and to visualize the whole background. And she has an acute eye for detail, which means she doesn't have to give you a great slab of description to convey what the place looks like. Just a few chosen words, and they were always really acute. It was a case, I think, of less is more. The reader was never hammered over the head with consciously presented description. Just the right word or the phrase brought the scene vividly to life for the reader, and I thought it was really excellent. I think it had a perfect ending. Not going to give any of the story away, but I do hope that what I've said about The Vanishing of Audrey Wilde will encourage some of the listeners to the podcast perhaps to pick the book up and put it on their bedside table.
That really sounded fascinating, yeah. And I'd love to read it. Really, that one I want to read. I know we say this every time, but that's really
that's going to be added to my Sundoku.
Yeah,
oh, very
get
good.
It on your Sundoku.
Well remembered.
T-S-U-N, Sundoku.
Sundoku.
T-S, okay. T-S-U-N.
I get that right, because we're using it all the time.
Well, that's the end of Write Club, the podcast for this week. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget, you still have 2 weeks to enter our latest short story competition. For all the details, have a look on our Write Club the Podcast page. Goodbye till next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.